said.
Don't believe what I just saw!
I'm a man! I'm 40!
This is John Sheezer. I'm here.
Eric Marino.
Eric.
No, I gotta tell you about the Clippers. I'm an
addict. Sportsaholics, I gotta.
Let's just hope this shit doesn't go viral.
Okay.
All right, it is that time of the week. We're finally back. Episode number 88, Sportsaholics, the Lynn Swan episode. Eric, that was your number.
Ooh, I'm sorry, I don't have the train whistle here, so you're just going to have to imagine. Insert train whistle here. Like that.
That was good. Yeah, that blew the levels. That was perfect. Well, Lynn Swan to me was always just the guy in the real nice jacket that was always cold on Sunday afternoons as an NFL announcer. It wasn't until I was 12, 13, 14 years old that I realized that, wait, this guy was just an incredible wide receiver? Oh, okay, I had no idea. And so, but you, did you grow up watching the Swan, Lynn, you know, if
no,
you will?
See, that's, okay, so I'm slightly older than you. And so, it was interesting to me because, you know, it's like I'm young enough, or I'm old enough in that sense that I was young enough to see Lynn Swan play in all those four Super Bowls. And so there's a weird point that, If you're a person of my age, so you saw Lynn Swan when you did, how you did, this is a guy that actually, like, you know, if you watch NFL films, in one of the Super Bowls, he, like, jumps up, his body is basically out of bounds, but somehow he catches the ball, twists back, fighting inertia and physics, and somehow lands back in bounds. That he was this, you know, I guess in some ways, it was like he was so good in the postseason that it was hard for anyone my age to actually understand that he wasn't necessarily good game to game or in season or as great in season as he was postseason. I guess you compare him today to almost like Panda, you know, Sandoval for the Giants. It's like, hey, maybe you don't need to have him in your 162 game lineup, but in the postseason, look out. And Swan was absolutely one of these prime time players that, you know, if it was Super Bowl ring was on the line, you know, John Stallworth, their other receiver, was unquestionably the greater, better, more reliable receiver. But Lynn Swan somehow, like when Super Bowl time came, he'd just sweep in and get the headlines and make the amazing play. You know, he has that. There's also like a bouncing one that he just keeps alive.
So kind of he's the Hines Ward minus being born in Korea.
Yeah, it was one of the interesting things I always remember is that, you know, Lynn Swan was one of those guys who he took ballet to work on his body control, and it was that was an interesting thing. They always had that human interest story because they were trying to make ballet not seem so girly to young boys. Like, it was, oh, look, Lynn Swan does it, so, like, tough guys can do it.
Yeah, what was that huge Alvin Ailey push in the 70s? I remember, like, in 90, like, I mean, Alvin Ailey, obviously, incredible, you know, dance studio and everything. But that is, am I right there? That seems about the right around that timetable where there was the huge Alvin Ailey renaissance.
Oh, sure. I can say that. And then, you know, but it's like, but I'm saying that Lynn Swan might have been your original Dancing with the Stars before the show ever existed. You knew that this athlete could hold his own on a dance floor.
That's very interesting. I like that.
Swan Lake starring Lynn Swan.
Amen.
You know what I'm saying?
Amen. And this is number 88, the Lynn Swan episode. I can't. Who would have ever thought we would have spent 3 minutes talking about Lynn Swan?
Oh man, come on! And then if he'd been in that Natalie Portman Mila Kunis, it would have been Steel Swan instead of Black Swan. It could have been like Steel Curtain Swan.
Well, and then we get all sorts of levels, and as far as marketing goes, you got sports fans, you got ballerina fans, you got Natalie Portman fans, you know, you got Labyrinth fans, You know, it goes.
A lot more people at the Pittsburgh Ballet with terrible towels, just being like, "Oh, that was a great pirouette!" Ooh, 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 and just waving terrible.
Absolutely,
towels.
Wiz Khalifa's there, yelling black and yellow from the balcony, VIP, popping bottles. It's a beautiful scene.
I love what you're saying,
Terry Brad.
So what's happening in sports, there, Royals fan?
Man, we got okay. All right, to get to this episode, which it's a great episode. We have on our good buddy John Huck. I talked to him about Chicago. Did you realize that that was the first time that Chicago had ever clinched a series at home in Wrigley Field?
I can't believe I didn't realize that. That's one of those crazy things. I couldn't believe I didn't know. I mean, I knew that Wrigley is the second. It's the second oldest stadium because
1914.
The Red Sox Fenway is 1912, and then. It's sometime in the 30s, I believe, that Wrigley starts. That's amazing that you...
No, Wrigley's 1914. 1914 is Wrigley. 1914.
I'm dubious on that, but all right.
Yeah, trust me. I know it's a fact. 1914. They just celebrated the 100 year last year, I promise you. But either way.
I guess as I'm thinking that it was the first All-Star game, and that was it. All right, anyway, doesn't matter. I can't believe it, Fenway, there was a lot of losing in Fenway, but the interesting thing was, like, Fenway won in their initial season, so it was always thought to be good luck. You know, we won, like, that year that it opened, so it was always considered good luck, and then it turned to be 86 years of desolation.
Yeah,
and it's... Some things happened there, like Bucky's dead and whatnot.
Did I ever tell you about the sketch I wrote? This would have been 15 years ago. I was still in college. I wrote a sketch that had Babe Ruth and Ted Williams and, I guess Bob Feller wasn't dead then. But it was just old Boston versus old Yankees. You know, Mantle's there and Reggie Jackson's seat's there. They're waiting for him. But they're playing cards. And so as it goes, Ted Williams is out of money and looks to Babe Ruth and says, "Can I borrow another $100,000? And he goes, "All right, but that's another 20 years on top of the curse if you lose." And he was like, and he just goes, "All right, give it to me." And so, but that was the joke, or you know, that was the cartoon. But lo and behold,
glad that's over.
Three,
man, I'm glad that's over.
Yeah, apparently, Ted Williams won the hand.
I sure hope he did.
But it was it's a great episode, you know, because John talks about just Wrigleyville going crazy and just being a Cubs fan, and you know, he's a great guy and very always busy, so we're happy to, you know, just to get a few minutes of his time. And then we bring
love
on
John Huck.
Yeah, John Huck, the man, the myth.
I love that the Cubs have parked that they parked Doc Brown's DeLorean in front of Wrigley.
Did they?
Because of that whole yep, there's some pictures on the internet about how because that whole Back to the Future Day and the Cubs win.
Dude, I love it. I've seen the Marty McFly hats. You know, the ones they used to give away at Pizza Hut back in the late '80s during the. But you know, they're like reflective, weird '80s style. Like you see fans. I saw Doc Brown and McFly jerseys. A picture of that I actually posted on the Sportsaholics Twitter at Sportsaholics. If you want to go check that picture out, you know, they're buying concessions. But, you know, it says one jersey's 20, the other one's 15. You know, brilliant, awesome. But, yeah, they're really getting it. And John talks about that. He brings that up in the interview. But it's just it's a matter of, you know, destiny, willing your team there. And John, as John will mention, you know, it's like putting it out there. And essentially, you know, the secret, if you will. But, you know.
Well, I will put something out there that you guys can all bet on this. The winner of the World Series will be someone wearing a team with a blue hat. That you can take to the bank. You can literally take that to the bank. A blue hat will win the World Series this year.
I had no idea. Okay, so Midnight Blue, Lou Gramm, you know, is my Royals mojo song, and I play it before every game, and it's been great. It's the winning percentage on Midnight Blue is it's got to be well above 80, 85. I mean, it hasn't failed me too many times. So I played it enough. It's now working for everybody. So I'm trying to scale it back, be more specific, more like we need a rally, you know, that sort of thing. But just to put it out there, Midnight Blue, that's strictly Kansas City's song, Toronto, Mets, Cubs. So don't try to steal any of our extra mojo.
Yeah, you better pee all on that song and own it by Wolf Washies, because a lot of blue hats, and it's almost the exact same color blue all the way around.
Hey, it's so royal blue.
I think they know what color to make the confetti.
Well, yeah, exactly. And then in the Dodgers, we're looking at sneaking in. I mean, it's an all blue Final Four in baseball right now. And so I'm just saying, Lou Gramm, you played at old Shawnee Days this past summer, the town I grew up in. So if you can play at their historical event, maybe just drive another 20 miles down the street and sing the national anthem, do something at Kauffman. Can I get you at Kauffman singing Midnight Blue? That would be amazing. But we've got tons of mojo actually going right now with the Royals, and we have on Josh Heideman also, the second interview on this episode.
This is going to be worth it, folks. You really, by the way, if you've ever been to a game, if you've ever yelled anything out of the game, trust me, you're going to want to hear this interview because you could be there. This could be you. It could happen to you. It's super cool, and just check out this interview because I love this story. I love this story. In fact, I love it more than the 30 for 30 subject that we talked about, our Korean friend who came and visited Sung all last Lee. Year to Sung get the Royals going. I love that 30 for 30 is out there right now. But this would be a short subject. I almost want this to be a 3 for 3 or a 30 for 30 seconds, something like that. I love this story.
No,
definitely come out for the second interview.
But both stories actually tie together through one man, Chris Kamler, past guest, was on last week's episode because he actually did a write-up on the story. And then next thing you know, Josh is getting contacted by the local news and like they're coming in interviewing him. And it's the Heideman ball. That's what it's referred to as, the Heideman ball. The Josh Heideman ball. And so Josh comes on, talk about the whole situation, the way it broke down, him yelling. I pull some audio clips. I break it down kind of with some audio to go into the interview to give you. So if you listen closely going into that interview, people, you'll hear a lot of crowd noise, but you'll hear an I got it, I got it, I got it. And I play it on loop several times. And then you have Goins admitting in the interview afterwards that he heard something. And then you got Bautista saying, I didn't say anything. So something was said, and it was clearly, I got it, I got it. And if Josh didn't yell it, and he's 40 feet away, 30, 50 feet away from the play, then who did yell it? Then why did everyone in his section turn around and say, I can't believe that worked? And here's the other thing, listener, and I talk about it in the interview later on this episode. I was there. I sat in those seats. I know how close to the field they are, and you're right there. Those are seats close enough where you can interfere with a play, like if a player's going into the crowd. And
they're Bartman-like. These seats are Bartman-like.
Very Bartman-like. Very Bartman-like, except for they're – it's not the front row, but the row behind. And as Josh will mention in the interview, the guy that was sitting in front of him actually had gotten up. So he technically, he leaned forward. So he was almost in the front row as he's screaming it. But we go, it's
see
a great
line of sight.
It's a great story. And if you want to read it, go to pinetarpress.com. And it's, I think, the yell heard round the world or something like that. But it's another great story by Chris Kamler. And he actually wrote an amazing story about the ALDS, about there was a lucky tray of spilt nachos in section 405, Eric.
And I love lucky spilt nachos.
So what happened? So anyway, it's on Pine Tar Press. But to sum up the story, which was incredible, someone spilt nachos, and the Royals immediately start rallying. So no one's allowed to touch the nachos or anything.
Sure.
So finally, the stadium comes around like, hey, we have to kind of clean up the spilt nachos. And everyone's like, don't touch the nachos. And so they swept up the nachos. So then someone ran and bought new nachos and set them down in place of the spilt nachos.
I love this story.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's like
we're in deep playoff baseball, people. Things are getting weird on Sportsaholics, and that's where we go best. Some of our best stuff happens in wacky October. It's right around the trick-or-treat season. Just like, I don't know if you saw, Sheeve, but my Patriots, you can't out Belichick with that funky fake punt play that Pagano and the Colts tried to pull on me on Monday Night Football, and Belichick wasn't having it. It was a very heads-up play by the team. They were not rattled. And a crucial win to remain unbeaten as the Patriots move against the New York Jets next week. I'm just putting that in real quick because we're going to get a lot of baseball.
5-0, I think, for the fourth or fifth time in the Belichick era, and it's starting to become to the point where you look at those seasons where you start, 3-1 or 4-2. Those are the anomalies. You're like, wow, those were bad years. We started out, 4-3, and it's becoming ridiculous. And they're doing it. They make players. Players show up there like a factory and they're like, train me, coach me to the point where people recognize the name on my jersey. Did you cut me loose?
Belichick University.
Yeah.
Coaches them up.
I'll go make my money elsewhere. I got no problem doing that. But while I'm here, there's a 50-50 chance I'm going to at least get to touch the grass at the Super Bowl. I might not win it, but I can get there with this team. And everyone knows that. And that's a huge advantage over the Jets or the Bills. I don't care how nice the coach is, or even Dallas. You know, it's just to buy into something.
The Jets are pretty serious. I think the Jets' coach, he went radio silent during the summer. He didn't let that Geno Smith jaw-breaking thing get the better of him. Strangely, I think that helped them to settle down. Fitzpatrick is doing great work. And they're a heady club that's dangerous. They have Revis over there. That locks some things down. Their defense is going to be a real test. I think the Jets next week is probably our biggest test. I really want that game because that would make us – we'd have two wins on the season against the Jets, and I'd really like to put them – I'd like to put them as close in the rearview mirror as I can.
Well,
but with that said, that was our little football interlude.
Well, no, I just want to say, like, now since the chef season is done, is a wash, I'm all of that karma. I'm now pushing over to the Patriots. I'm now pulling for – yet another perfect.
By the way, Kansas City, you just hold on to that, Carmen. You just put it towards the Royals. I understand that. There's basically not enough room in the Kansas City lifeboat for both the Royals and the Chiefs playoff hopes.
I don't know so what it is. It's like a lot of injuries.
All in. You're
it's
all in
just...
Royals. All Kansas City, you're all in on this ALCS. And hopefully the World Series, another move to the World Series, that you can finally win this one. Although, you know, if you end up beating the Cubs, I can't say you're going to be well-liked.
No, but that's fine. I'm fine being the team. The Cubs will be happy they made it to the World Series. Believe me, I've got no problem.
But the other thing is, if you guys have to say, all Kansas City fans out there, trust me, as a Boston, lifelong Boston fan who was very, I was just in New York. I got to watch some of the Cubs Mets game two while I was sitting in New York. It was an interesting experience.
Nice.
It reminded me, guys, the one thing: if the Royals end up meeting the Mets, you're going to have to deal with all those two-faced New Yorkers who suddenly are Mets fans. They're Yankee fans all season long, but if the Mets come along and sneak into the postseason, suddenly they're on the other team. Spike Lee has two jackets in his closet, people, and he'll wear either one anytime because you can't trust anyone from New York.
But go Royals. But don't be mistaken. Those jackets will be made by Cross Colors. No, and it's good for the Mets. I mean, this buys like 2 or 3 years, 4 year block of youth that now can become Mets fans as the Yankees are down, you know, kind of a thing. And they've got players to get behind. They're not all just, I mean, Yankee players, to put it really simply. You know, you've got a little bit of personality, a little bit of drama. You know, the Mets,
right.
I definitely would like to play, you know, if making the World Series. I would prefer the Cubs just for the historical factor. It's a World Series that now goes down in history just because the Cubs finally made it back to the World Series. So I think to capture Kansas City baseball in a game like that would be incredible and an opportunity.
Yeah.
An opportunity you just couldn't pass up. Nothing against the Mets. I love what they do. I love seeing Jerry Seinfeld. You know, I love seeing the Cespedes for the Mets of Us signs. You know, like the fest. You know, all that stuff. It's awesome. Good for you, New York. But unfortunately, you know, the Cubs is just, it's a much prettier prom date, if you will, for the World Series.
That sounds like we need to go back to the future and talk to our leading Cubs fan, John Huck.
Absolutely. And when we get done with John, we'll go into our interview with the Heidemann Ball founder himself, Josh Heidemann, the man who yelled, I got it," causing Ryan Goins to drop a ball, causing Jose Bautista to throw him under the bus, and causing him, 2 days later, to be on Sportsaholics, guys.
All right, well, you guys listen along with me because I can't wait to hear these interviews. And then I'll see you guys on the other side.
Absolutely. Stay obsessed. All right, and we are back with Cubs fan, Cubs fanatic, great actor, great comedian, good friend of the show, good friend of mine, John Huck. John, how are you doing? How's the playoffs feeling? I know right now it's a little rough after last night's game, and as we're recording this, the Cubs are down 0-2, but I watched some of their batting practice today. They don't look worried. They're relaxed. They're still joking. I think they're young enough to really not be phased by this. They don't realize, you know, the pressure of the postseason. You know, if you're 33 and it's your first time making it, you know, you're like, this is my chance. But when you're 22, you're like, I'm Kyle Schwarber. Whatever. I'm going to go to the postseason like 10 more times.
That is a good point. I think they are not worried. I don't think it's that they don't think there's pressure or there's expectations. I just feel that they've bounced back before, and they, this particular team, it's just, they're looking at it as a one-game winning streak is what I keep hearing on MLB Network. So it's like, if they just got to win one game, and then they win the next game, and then they win the next game. You know what I mean? They just have to win one game at a time, which I know sounds cliche. I'm happy they're going back to Wrigley. I was very disappointed, though, in those first two games. I mean, that was, I feel maybe Arrieta just had too many innings this year.
247, or it's something ridiculous. So you're like, is that Jake Arrieta or Satchel Paige?
Right, yeah. I mean, that it could be taking its toll, you know what I mean? It's one of those things. I think I'm glad that Hendricks is on the mound for game three. I'm glad they're back in Chicago.
Hendricks is safe. Like, yeah, I think, you know, he can give up three or four runs, but I think you guys are going to be able to get five or six. You know, I think it's going to be one of those kind of games.
I think the last time they played in Chicago, they hit the most home runs hit by, you know, any team in the postseason. So they, and today the wind was blowing out. I don't know what it's going to be doing tomorrow, but, you know, they have a very good chance at winning games three and four, and they need those games. It has to happen. So I'm trying not to, I'm doing my best to not be the Cubs fan I was, you know, 1, 2, 3, 10 years ago, which would have been, yeah, this is over, you know. But I do think this is just a different team. They bounce back even after a mistake, you know what I mean? They bounce back, the ball gets to the same place, and they'll make the play the next time. So I have faith, and I'm trying to stay positive that I think game three and four are looking really good for being in our favor.
You know, they are. I mean, you guys play, the home field advantage there at Wrigley is, you know, second to only Kauffman, in my opinion, you know, in baseball.
But to your point, I don't think the Cubs had the most road victories this year. Like, it's not about where they're playing. I'm just hoping, and I guess you're right, home field advantage, I just hope the crowd could just give them a little bit of kick in the ass, because I feel like, even though they weren't giving up those first two games, there was just something not as up about them. I don't know how to explain it. It's just that both games felt different.
Well, you know,
so I'm hoping that getting back to Chicago will give them that little bit of spark.
No. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about clinching, you know, in the ALDS, and with St. Louis being involved as well, but finally at home. That was the most everyone knows about, the 1945 last World Series, 1908 the last one that they'd won the World Series, which predates Wrigley Field by, you know, 6 years, I think. 1914,
yeah,
I think.
Wasn't built until 1914, and the Cubs didn't play in it until 1916.
That's the first time they had clinched a series in the playoffs at home. So describe, like, what was that like? I mean, I know you weren't there, but did you have friends and family that were even in Wrigleyville at the time? I don't even care if they were at the game, but what did that feel like, you think, for the city of Chicago?
Everybody I talked to said the place was just going nuts. Like, and it continued to go nuts for days. Like, and that's clinching the first round. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The epicness of an actual World Series win in town would be, I don't know if the city could survive. You know what I mean? I wasn't there. And for me, it means a lot. It was like the Blackhawks winning at home finally. It was just nice. You know what I mean? It's nice for the city. I kind of like winning on the road as well. I don't think there's anything wrong with celebrating in someone else's stadium, and it kind of makes me laugh sometimes. But
it is awkward. It's very awkward.
It's awkward. That's the thing. It's awkward. Like, it's not as fun for the players, I don't think.
I think they kind of block it out after a while, because at some point all their friends and close family are on the field and they're celebrating. But
yeah,
there's something to be said, because I know in Kansas City, you know, even after the wild card game last year, you even saw it. They won the ALDS game too. Even after that game, you know, you're still going to have 20,000 fans that are going to rush the first base dugout and hang around. The players come out, you know, wave, and everyone, you know, has a great time, you know, and that sort of thing. So you do miss out on that winning on the road, but you know, just to kind of soak that in, I mean, that's something to play for, that little extra celebrate at home kind of a thing. I mean,
yeah. I mean, the whole thing has been, you know, I can't compare it to what the Royals did last year, because obviously that was incredible, and even though they didn't win the World Series, it was still such a great run, you know what I mean, to get all the way there and just to really
game seven
under the radar the entire time. Even when they were like, whoa, what's going on, people were still like, well, you know, this will be the end, and then that'll be have been a good season, and it just kept going. And it was like, I like when, you know, people on TV are talking about, well, you know, they look good for the Cavs. Good, I love that. Just less praise, more, well, this is over by the media is fine with me. Because then, I don't know, I feel the Cubs will then show them up. I don't know what I'm getting at, except for,
it's going to bounce
back. And I think it can be as dramatic as what the Red Sox did against the Yankees the first year they won, or it can be more win two games, have to go back to New York, and you know what I mean, like, I don't know. I'm just trying to.
I mean, you know, right now it's going to go. If for you guys to win, it's going seven. You got to win game seven back in New York. I mean, unless you pull off the super improbable and just sweep four in a row, which you guys can do. You had the 9-game win streak, and I think, did you have two win streaks this past season that were more than 8 games, some maybe even 3? I know you guys got hot several.
We had at least 2 that went 7, and then I think 8 was the longest.
Yeah, so it's like that's something you guys can piece together, and you've got stoppers. The LaTroy Hawkins thing is awesome. Well, I mean, I'm like, wow. Are you sure that's not Julio Franco? Are you sure? Let me see a driver's license. Come on, like, that is in 21 years of professional baseball. Had he played for Chicago before? For some reason, either way, I'll look it up. I'll look it up later.
Maybe the White Sox.
Yeah, that's probably. I mean, he played for like 18 teams, so it's not.
They call that. They try to make that nice sounding by saying journeyman, right?
Yeah, journeyman. It must be incredibly frustrating, you know. Every
just that's rough. That's gonna be rough on your family too. If you got a family, just in general. It'd be like a kid going to change in high school is like 14 times a semester.
Well, this is what happens. It's like, he'll sign as a free agent and then get cut in like June, then sign with someone, have a great July, and then they'll trade him at the trading deadline to someone in the playoff contention. That's the story of his career several times over. So you end up playing for 3 different teams in 1 year. But okay, to go back to the Cubs, I want to talk about Joe Maddon, the coach here, and I wanted to emphasize or ask you also to, knowing that you'll be back, you guys will be back, does that help in watching this year's playoffs? Or I know it's still nerve-wracking, but is there a sense of like, you know what, there is next year, it's not this one and done kind of thing? And two, if Joe Maddon wins the World Series, is there any legitimate concern for his safety? Would Mike Ditka possibly put a hit out on his life in fear? Because Ditka runs Chicago, and I don't know if there's enough room for a Ditka and a Madden's Steakhouse. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, he'll be absolutely the new Ditka in town as 1985 at this point now is 30 years removed. I mean, but he is the godfather of Chicago. Your thoughts on any possible Madden Ditka rivalry?
I'll say this. There is room for Madden in Chicago, even with Ditka. To me, Madden is a more impressive figure. And I think that if Madden opened a steakhouse It would also have like a marijuana pharmacy attached to it in the back.
And an incredible sushi. Yeah, it wouldn't just be all steaks, or there'd be organic.
It wouldn't be all steaks.
Grass fed.
There'd be lots of different kind of beers on tap, and there'd be a nice lounge to hang out in. But I also think I love Joe Madden. I think he's the best coach the Chicago Cubs have had since, you know, 1908. Honestly, he's what the team needs. He's loose, but he's smart. You can see him getting frustrated in these first two games, which is fine. He's the coach. He should be pissed because they're not hitting. They're swinging at garbage. They're doing a lot of negative things that he's probably worked all year to get them to stop.
Yeah.
So, I already love the guy. And just knowing that the team is so young and they're still together and there's no one, like Dexter Fowler is really the only one that's going to be like a free agent, I think, after this year, and that is going to be looking maybe for more money. But I think the rest of those guys are staying, and the rest of the guys will be there. And Theo has built a great core group. And with Madden leading them, they will be in the playoffs. You know, it's going to start getting weird when they don't make the playoffs.
Yeah, but and you're going to start getting,
I don't want to wait. I don't want to wait ever for another day. You know what I mean? If I had my way, all the games would be played today and we'd get to the World Series tonight. Like, I want them to go now.
I mean,
not only because it's 2015, but I just feel like they have a chance to win multiple championships. And I think the sooner they start that, the better off I'll feel about it.
And beyond the championships, it's the small battles. You finally got over on the Cardinals. I mean, that in itself has to feel amazing.
That was my World Series.
Exactly. I mean, for listeners who don't know the history there, it's been one-sided. I think I'm not even going to say a year, but it's been a while since the last time, you know, the Cubs, I think like in the 40s or did they do it? No, either way. They've been dominant.
Never played the Cardinals in the playoffs.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, so that was huge, but they have also just dominated us for the since like 2008. And even then, they were dominating us. You know what I mean? We just got lucky and went to the playoffs.
And that was
then they built what was essentially why I didn't like them was because I was jealous of the team they had. This group of guys that played together in the minors and came up together and were awesome.
Yeah.
And that is what the Cubs finally did. And that was how we were finally able to, as you say, get over on them, especially in the playoffs, which was so fantastic.
It's crazy. Yeah, Cardinal fans, you guys are awesome and you're diehard, but your shit does stink. I'm sorry, and you guys have, you know, you're there, but you've never really had to cheer on a losing product, at least in the last, I would argue, really
20 years.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm gonna go like right when McGuire shows up, the early La Russa years, if you will, but the right at the dawn of the steroid era. But I mean,
Oh, go ahead.
No, by all means.
I was going to say, I used to kind of just find, you know, I was always very annoyed with the Cardinals because they were always so good, but I also found their fan base super annoying. I was really surprised when the Cubs beat them, how many Cardinal fans reached out to me to say congratulations and thought, like, really, like, Skyler Stone left me a voice message that was a real, like, not, you know, a sincere and in-depth thought about, and this is, I agree with this too, he was saying that there's something they got to be able to do a scientific study on putting something out there for so long into the universe, because the Back to the Future thing has been going on since 1985, and it was a joke. It was funny because they'd never won and they weren't gonna, they sucked then and it didn't matter, and they didn't really suck then. They were actually okay and they made a couple of runs at it, but it wasn't anything spectacular. But it's been out there for that long, for so many years. It's been joked about. It's been talked about. It's been mentioned. It's been all over the internet, like, for so long, that if they did win this year, is there something to just, like, just start putting stuff out there?
I mean, that's the secret. That's the secret, right? That's the secret, right? Isn't that the secret?
Is that the secret? Well, if that's the secret, then thank you, Robert Zemeckis, and whoever else has anything to do with Back to the Future.
It is pretty remarkable. And then even the call of the Marlins thing. I mean, granted, I didn't know this until recently, but the Miami Marlins were actually a minor league team in the 50s and 60s in Miami. And I just learned that recently. Identical logo almost, you know, kind of a thing. But yeah, to see that, you know, on there also, it's pretty crazy. It's so, and so there is room though. You got a Madden's, because Madden's going to retire a Cub. There's no reason. I think, in fact, he just Sparky Anderson the thing, you know, because he seems like he really enjoys coaching. Just do it for 25 years. Bring, like, you know, I think 3 or 4 World Series, you know, over a 20-year span, what you guys would be more than happy with.
I'd be happy with one, man. I'd be happy with one. But I don't see it being only the way that they've organized this. Getting mad and all that, I don't see it being a one and done. Like you said, I think they can make many, many runs and make this a very exciting next 10, 15 years of baseball for Cubs fans and for everybody, because if the Cubs are doing well, trust me, everyone's going to benefit.
Yeah,
baseball. I don't know how else to say that except for, like, if you know, if you're not enjoying this, if you're not, like, a diehard Mets fan and you're not rooting for the Cubs, you know, I don't know. You got like a tiny, tiny black heart that beats 2 times a year, I guess.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah, you're the type of guy that would hit somebody and just drive off and just, you know, Fargo that right in the back of your head. Just Fargo it. Never telling anybody about that. And that's a bad thing. So that's what you root for the Cubs, damn it, is what we're getting at here.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
There's no reason not to. I mean, all those years and all those fans. I mean, how many more 102-year-old women am I going to have to see holding up a sign that says, "Win one before I die"?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah.
That was the saddest thing about the Miami game when they played the Marlins, and then they made those 6 errors after the Bartman thing, and the, you know, oxygen in the whole place was sucked out, and you could see they just started panning in on old people who were clearly not going to live another year. And I was like, oh, my God. And my guess was they were born 1909, 1910,
yep.
1911. You know what I mean? Like, just years after when everyone was like, oh, the Cubs are going to win another one soon.
And then came,
and then they were like, oh, that'll be fun to watch.
Then came World War One, then the Depression, then World War Two, then the Cuban Missile Crisis, then Vietnam. Yeah.
Then the Cardinals.
And then, yeah, then the St. Louis Browns. Then they left. And one last thing, and I'm going to put this out there with the Schwarber home run. Before we let you go, what are your thoughts? So they encase the ball on the roof, and this to me is where Cubs fans go too far, in the sense of you're ultimately creating something that can happen in the future that then can be conceived as a curse or something, like, oh, the ball got moved. It rained and the ball got wet and damaged. This season's cursed. You know what I mean? It creates another storyline potentially. Your thoughts on that? You think they went too far putting that thing in a case?
I think it's annoying, man. I don't, like, there are still some guys on MLB that'll bring up the Billy Goat thing. And it's like, as much as I don't like Dusty Baker, at least on TBS when they bring it up, he's like, no, that's ridiculous. Like, I think you got to put all that stuff aside. Don't bring any, you know, people in to smudge the dugout. There's not a curse, okay? The curse is you've sucked for a really long time. That's the curse.
Yeah.
The fix of that curse is to get players that can play as a team that can bounce back from being down 0-2 and can come back and win a series and advance to the World Series. I mean, the curse is just play fucking better. You know what I mean? That's the end of the curse right there. Just be better.
As soon as they start putting a case around the ball, I'm just
get the ball out of there. Like,
yeah, it's,
yeah, no, I'm just ignoring that stuff. I'm just ignoring it. I'm like, it doesn't affect me. It doesn't matter. And I hope the players are ignoring it too.
Well, it's one of those things. It's like, okay, so now you've got an extra 5-minute stop on the Wrigleyville tour, you know, when you take people around on off days and charge them.
But you you're not going to get up there. You're just going to look up to the top of the scoreboard and be like, oh, it's up there? Okay.
Pretty cool. Well, John, listeners at home, find John online, Twitter, at John Huck. Touring all over the country, primarily in L.A. when you're not on the road. Find him on Facebook. You got a website, John? I do.
All my dates are up on my website. You can go to www.johnhuck.me.
John is J-O-N, just like myself, H-U-C-K.M-E. johnhuck.me. Yeah. John, thanks for coming on. And I'm rooting for the Cubs. Listeners, you guys, pull for the Cubs. I mean, I want to see a Royals-Cubs World Series.
More than anything.
It would be
great if it was last year. If it was both their first times in a long time.
Oh man. Well, then now you're just getting crazy. But it would
right.
just...
But
it would,
the way the Royals are playing, they're playing like, yeah, getting there was fun, but we didn't like losing, and we don't plan on losing again.
It's going to be great. There's going to be a whole bunch of new Royals murals all over Kansas City now whenever I go back to visit.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch now. It's awesome. But nice. Yeah, listeners, go to at John Huck, johuck.me. Check him out. John, thanks for your time. Go Cubbies.
Thanks a lot.
Go Royals. Thank you, brother. We'll talk soon.
All right. Chicago Cubs got the greatest fan.
The communication that I heard, I thought he said something that should never happen in flop walk.
Should be one guy speaks.
Just one guy speaks. The person with priority.
You had goings going like this. Doesn't that tell the signal you got to get off? He did it twice.
Yes, you can use hand gestures, but I think the outfielder has to take charge and be aggressive
else around him.
What I heard was him not taking accountability and him putting a younger teammate in a position to answer questions.
Did he call you up? What did you see there?
I think there's video. You can watch it.
He said he thought he heard something.
Take your perspective.
I don't really want to do that.
No, he just said he thought he heard something, so. But you didn't say anything, I take it.
There's video, you guys can watch it.
Lost track of where I was in the field, but I thought I heard something that I didn't, and I backed off the ball. I should have been more aggressive.
All right, and we are back on Sportsaholics, and we have a very special guest, a very good friend of mine, dear friend of mine, the manufacturer of what I'm now calling the Heidemann ball, Josh Heidemann. Welcome to Sportsaholics. How are you doing, man?
Good, John. How are you?
I'm very well, So game two, ALCS, Kauffman Stadium. I believe the seventh inning. Ben Zobrist steps up to the plate, fouls a ball. I would say 20 feet behind the first baseline, and Goins. Is it Johnny Goins, Josh?
Ryan Goins
breaks for the ball, and at the last second pulls up, assuming Bautista is calling for the ball, and the ball hits the ground, Zobrist on first. Six hits later, the Royals are winning by 3 runs and end up taking the game. So he thought he heard, I got it. Bautista was very adamant, saying, I never said I got it. I mean, you may have heard that, but I didn't say it. And then, lo and behold, come to find out, my main man, my boy, Josh Heidemann, was 30, 40 feet away, screaming, I got it. So he won the game. In my opinion, he won the game. It was a mojo swing, and it was payback for that stupid wire ball, the ball that hit the wire, whatever that was earlier in the game. But what? Now there's a story about it. The news has come to interview the man. Josh, what? I mean, did you ever imagine something like this could even happen? Like there'd be a story, like the news would come by to talk to you about the ball?
No, absolutely not. I mean, you don't go to a baseball game thinking you're actually going to have some sort of impact on the actual game itself. So, no, absolutely not. But it when it happened, I knew it had an impact. So awesome.
So walk us through the game. At this point, the Royals are down 3-0. They're getting the pitching. We're getting worked over. We're really getting nothing going at all. And when Zobrist hits that ball, take us from that point. Zobrist, the ball's in the air. What's going through your head?
To back up even further, the Royals hadn't had a base runner since the first pitch of the game where they got a base hit, and then after that it was nothing but outs for the Royals.
Price was on fire.
Right, and so I was, like every other fan in Kauffman, I could just kind of was turning to everybody around me and said, they just need something. They just need to get a base runner on there, break up this rhythm that Price is in, and see what happens. And so I'm sitting there. They ran a hype video with Eric Stonestreet from Modern Family. They did this big hype video. The crowd's on their feet. Everyone's kind of into it at the beginning of the seventh inning. And first pitch, like you said, John, just a routine. We call it a pop-up, but it was really almost more of a fly ball. It was a ball that the outfielder really should have caught. And as soon as it's hit, everybody in the stadium, Zobrist throws his bat down. Everyone in the stadium just kind of groans and holds their breath because, just like the air was just let out of the ball again. And as I'm watching this play develop, I've probably done this 10 times, 12 times before Royals games, never had success at it. But as the ball's in the air, I can see the second baseman drifting back. He starts waving for it. I see Bautista out of the corner of my eye kind of slow up. But just instincts, I just said, I've got it. And I sat forward, I leaned forward, because the guy in front of me, I'm in the second row, the guy in front of me was, getting a beer or going to the bathroom. So I had an open space, I leaned straight forward, just screamed to the top of my lungs. And the second time I said, I've got it, that's when Goins just pulled up and fell to the ground. So that's what happened, and I, at that point, was in complete shock that it and then the ball hit the ground, and I was just in complete shock that it had actually worked.
Now, what are the people around you? What are they? Are they saying anything to you? Are they looking at you in disbelief? What was their reaction?
Their first reaction was just like every other fan, just excited the ball hit the ground, and then they turned and looked at me, and they were in as much shock as I was that, holy cow, that just affected the game. The guy that was missing from the seat in front of me, his son was sitting to his side, and who was, probably about my age, around 30. And when his dad got back, he said, you missed it. He goes, all I know is there's a pop-up that's coming down, and next thing I know, a head popped forward in front of me, just started screaming, I've got it, and it fell to the ground. Unfortunately, I don't know that guy's name. I don't know him from Adam, so I wish I would have got his contact information so he could verify what happened, but didn't do that because I did not realize, I didn't imagine they'd put 5 straight hits together after that.
No kidding. Just went all Houston on them.
Because the next pitch could have been a ground ball level play and then nobody cares. But the fact it started that rally is what makes it so awesome.
No, it was unbelievable. And then the other thing, too, is that I've sat in those seats. Listeners, that's why I believe every word of this, because I've sat in those seats, and these seats are right behind the tarp. So actually, when the Royals, during the World Series, God hope, when you're watching the game, look at where the rain delay tarp is. These seats are like halfway through that tarp. So go like halfway down the tarp and look up in the second row. That's where these seats are, and they're right there, and they're close enough where you could get to a ball on the rail and like interfere with play easily, because it's like the right fielder can drift over there, and the wall's like 6-7 feet, so it's, and then they're high seats too, so it's like the wall's like at your, anyway, they're great seats. And how far away would you say that you were from the play, from where the ball hit?
I would say maybe 30 to 50 feet, definitely within range of the players hearing me. And like I said, the whole stadium kind of, it was still loud. I think the fact there was still some additional noise helped for certain, but I know that he heard my voice. It wasn't so loud that he couldn't have heard me. And like I said, as soon as I said the second, I've got it, that's when he pulled up and just hit the ground. Because, you know, the second baseman doesn't want to catch that ball. That's a ball that was far enough back in the outfield. Bautista should have just run through that and caught it easily. He wouldn't have had to die for it. He wouldn't have had to do much other than run probably 90%.
And that's the outfielder. The outfielder is that's like a rule in baseball, right? That's you yield to the outfielder because it's easier to run under a ball than to run back to a ball, right?
Right. That's exactly right. And to be honest, no second baseman wants to go that far in the outfield and catch a pop up or a fly ball, right? That's not. They realize they're vulnerable. That's like a high, you know, wide receiver running across the middle on a high pass. Like they're going to go for it. But they really wish they weren't put in that spot. So that's why I think Goins was more than happy to hear someone call for the ball.
Because yeah, at that point he's like, that's why it worked. He's like, shit. He hears, I got it. He's like, thank God, Joey Bats isn't all about offense for once. He's gonna come in here and make this ball catch it. Nope, didn't. And then what does he do? Just throw me under the bus immediately? Awesome. Great teammate, buddy. And something like that might cause a rift in the locker room. Hopefully it does, you know. But my thing too with the listeners here, Josh played collegiate baseball. He's played against Albert Pujols when he was 19 years old. You know, he's been played baseball forever and knows the game of baseball. And Josh, what position did you play?
I played second base in college. I played shortstop and third base also, but I played a season at second base.
There you go. And have you made a similar play to that in your baseball career?
Yeah. In fact, I've seen in college I had fans try that before at some of our games on us. Sometimes other teams would try that kind of trick, which is probably not cool for other teams to do it, but fans, it's fair game.
Yeah,
so I mean, it's not the first time it's happened. Like I said, I've tried it before at Royals games. It's just never worked.
Well, I, you know, up until now, I refer to it as the Heidemann ball. But another instance of this was a few years ago. Was A-Rod running around third base screaming, I got it, causing the ball to drop. And I forget, I don't know who they're playing. I'll just say the Indians because stuff like that always happens to the Indians. And their players were like, what are you doing? And he's like, I didn't say anything. And they're like, yeah, no, you kind of did. It wasn't someone in the outfield. Cut to the replay of his lips just saying, I got it. You know, so if you're on the field of play screaming that, that's just a dick move. You're just going to get hit your next time you're at bat, in my opinion. But if you're in the crowd, fair game.
Right.
And I wanted to break down the play actually logically, if you will, in the sense of like people that aren't going to believe this. So you're going to be like, no way. It's not going to happen. There's enough evidence also, I think, to prove this. One, if you watch the game, and this is something I replayed probably 10 times, when the ball goes up in the air, it goes from a roaring crowd to everyone gasping at like, oh man, one out already. So the decibel level drops probably 80% at that point. So you can faintly hear the cadence of, I got it. Can you actually hear those words? No, you can't. But it's quiet enough, you can hear like a spike in that cadence if you go back and listen to it. And this is kind of one of those ghost hunters kind of thing. It's like, did you really hear that? You know, or are you wanting to hear that? And so if you listen, and if you really listen for it, you can hear it. I promise you that. So that's one. Two, the range, 30, 40 feet away. Absolutely, that guy can hear you. You're screaming into his left ear, which is the same ear he's expecting to hear stuff, you know, coming from Joey over his left shoulder running behind him. And the fact that you say he drops after the second time or the first time that you yell, I got it.
Well, I yelled it pretty quickly, and I yelled it at the same time where the second baseman has to make the decision, am I going to actually go for this or am I going to back off?
And at
so I think I caught him at the right moment of uncertainty, and I think it was at the second I've got it where he, you know, the first one he probably heard it, the second one he confirmed it, and that's what caused him to pull off.
And okay, so the range is there. Absolutely, you could yell and be heard screaming, "I got it!" from those seats. I know that personally because I sat in those seats, and you can. It's one. They're close enough where when you say stuff at players, they'll look at you and smile in between innings and that sort of thing. You know,
they might tip their cap and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, hand you a ball. They can hand you a ball in those seats. And so he hears, I got it. And so he immediately, he curls up in that defensive position that says to me, like, I'm out of place. I'm in danger of being run over by Bautista because he's calling for the ball charging in. So he curls up in that ball. So that is the way he reacted tells me that he heard I got it. Cut to post-game interview. Actually, let's go back to the play. So he turns around. He then asks, Joey Bats, did you call for the ball? And you see him shake his head no, as to say, no, this is your bad. I had nothing to do with this. I don't know what you heard, but you didn't hear me say I got it. So if you didn't hear him say I got it, he heard I got it, because cut to the press conference after the game. He goes, I thought I heard something I didn't hear. Well, what he thought he heard was I got it, I got it. Joey Bautista said, I didn't say I got it. So where did the I got it come from? It came from Josh Heideman's mouth 40 feet away, yelling into his ear as the crowd decibel level drops low enough that he could distinguish one person screaming as everyone else in Kauffman Stadium has given up on the play. And why Josh is screaming is because he's played baseball for 15 years. He has the baseball prowess to know what it's like to be in that position and to know what's going through that player's head, and to yell, to know that's the last thing, that's the first thing he wants to hear. And in that much pressure on him, he hears, I got it, I got it, immediately pulls the ripcord on the play, says, whoo, Joey's got this. I don't have to deal with this. I don't have to make this hard catch. Turns around, ball drops. Did you say I got it? No, I didn't. I didn't. End of play. That, and if you can't follow that timeline right there with all the evidence, I mean, it all points to you screaming, I got it, Josh.
Yeah, and another part of anecdotal evidence is the after the inning was over, my wife was there with my wife and my parents. My wife was up getting some food at the concession stand when the play actually happened. So she wasn't there. She returns. I tell her what happened. She looks at me sheepishly and kind of rolls her eyes. And then after the inning's over, the front row, all six people in the front row turn around to me, high-five me, and then recount the story to her, at which point she becomes a believer and is absolutely mortified. She is the last person who wants to believe I impacted that play. Because she is mortified that I did it. And she wants more than anybody to believe it didn't actually, that I did not actually impact the play. But she believes it and wishes it didn't happen.
Well, frankly, you know, but it's just one of those freak plays, you know, like the Bartman ball or the Jeffrey Mayer, the kid in Baltimore, or the Yankees fan that pulled that ball over against the Orioles. You know, it's a freakish play, and it's crazy that you know, to have affected a baseball game. I mean, and like you said, you know, earlier when we were off, it's like, yeah, no, you didn't get five hits after that. You didn't win the game, but you gave us an extra out. And more importantly, it was like a redo for that, like I said, mentioned earlier, that weird ball that came off the wire. And I told, when I was watching the game, I'm thinking in my head, we're going to get one of those back. That's just how it works. Our karma is good enough. We're a good enough team. We're good enough to the game of baseball that we'll get a play back. And an unbelievable play did we get back. The Heideman ball.
And you know, like you said, John, I had no way to take credit for anything other than the fact I stopped Goins from making that catch. But I mean, the rest of it was up to the players, and that's just cool, yeah, to actually realize, yeah, it had an impact on the play. So.
Well, and you know what? Good for the Royals for fighting for home field advantage, and that's plays like this are exactly why you want to fight all the way up to the end of the year for home field advantage in the playoffs, and it paid off more than ever. Now we have the Heideman ball, and if you go to Pine Tar Press, Chris Kamler is really the guy that blew the lid off this thing. Obviously, friend of Sportsaholics, been on many times to talk baseball, talk Royals, but if you go to pinetarpress.com, the articles that Chris wrote is up there. It's fantastic, and you give it a read, give it a share. You know, very well written, very funny as well, as Chris always does, but Josh, thanks for your time, and thanks for giving birth to the Heideman ball. And I think Royals fans out there, if you want to refer to this as the Heideman ball for the rest of your life, that would be awesome. I don't know if Josh thinks that's a good thing or not, but I don't care, because it is the Heideman ball, goddammit.
Thanks, John.
Well, hey, thanks for your time, man, and we'll talk soon, all right? Probably after this win tonight.
Yeah, that sounds good.
All right, man. Be good.
All right. Bye. Now when you're talking Royal baseball, Jim Colborne, Rich Sheinblum,
The waterfalls at Royal Park, where Brett attacked the 400 mark. Busby, two no-hitters, one. Kansas City, here I come. '81 wasn't all there. There were strikes and Billy Ball there. But once again, a brand new season calls. New names join the old. Another team unfolds. They'll answer the bell with blue and UL. So let's play ball. I'm talking baseball. Willie Wilson, Georgie Brett, Royal Baseball. Akins, Tom Poquet, Leonard, and Gurith throw the pee.
All right, so Josh, thank you for giving us your time. Hopefully you go down to Royals lore as just as the Heideman ball. I'm pushing for it. Baseball fans just know the Heideman ball. I put in the audio evidence leading into the interview. Go back and listen to it. You can faintly hear, I got it. There's a lot of crowd noise, but I'm sure someone can even pull better quality with the equipment I have. I'm fine with it. And if it's not good enough, you know what? Whatever. Who cares? I've got like maybe 200.
Do your own research. At home. If you don't believe in sportsaholics are telling you, feel free to do your own research. This will bear out.
Here's the key.
And this story is going to blow up. It's going to get a little bit bigger. And you know, this is better than that Jeffrey Dye story. What was that name of that kid from the Yankees and the Orioles who reached over?
Jeremy Meyer, I believe.
Yeah, whatever that kid's name was. I thought it was Jeff something. But hey, you know, write to the sportsaholics at Gmail if you have any corrections about that. And I also have to say, the Heideman ball thing, I'm a little bit jealous because the closest I really get to interact with my beloved Red Sox during the 2004, they were visiting the Angels, and they were winning late, and they put in defensive first place and replacement Dave McCarthy. Some of you might remember the lovable Dave McCarthy. And then it was in one of the late innings, I want to say the seventh, eighth, or ninth. I got to yell out two down, and McCarthy gave me the nod like he got it.
It feels good. It feels good to be that close. It feels good. It was Jeffrey.
Yeah, it feels great. It feels great. But I didn't. I really love the I got it. A classic. How many times have you said that, yelled it at your TV, and it doesn't affect anything?
Well,
it actually had an effect on the game. So don't ever tell me the fans don't affect the game.
It was Jeffrey Mayer. That was the kid's name, in the Yankee fan that pulled the ball over the fence against the Orioles.
Yeah, we were both right. All right, Jeff Dye is a comedian who's on MTV.
Yeah.
A friend of ours. That's why I have that name in my head.
Jeff's awesome, man. He sent me a couple texts the other day about, like, during the Royals games, like, dude, this is unbelievable. You know, he's like, he's a huge, huge sports fan. In fact, has a really, really nice actual baseball and basketball card collection. An enormous Supersonics fan. And actually, I don't know, I follow him on Twitter and Instagram. It's a very interesting life the guy leads. One, he's a funny comedian, but he just got done filming something with Terry Bradshaw and a bunch of other just older celebrities. I have no idea what it was, but it just, anyway.
Work.
Yeah.
I have no idea what it is, but check out Jeff Dye. He's doing great stuff. And by the way,
what's the guy? Okay, what's Jeff the Star
Dye?
Trek?
We're talking about Jeff Dye. Things happen in the Sportsaholics. It gets weird in October.
Okay, what's the guy? I can't think of his name. I'm sorry. The Star Trek. The Captain Kirk. What's his name? The crazy dude.
Jean-Luc Picard?
No. Okay. The guy from the Progressive
Captain Kirk, William Shatner?
It was Terry Bradshaw. It's like him, Terry Bradshaw, playing golf, drinking mimosas. I'm like, this is the best these are the best pictures I've ever seen. So definitely, yeah, they're hilarious. But anyway, we'll have to get him on, talk about the Mariners always, you know, sucking and Seattle not having football and the 12th man. I was told by this is a quick before we get out of here, a quick side note on the 12th man. I was told by a Seattle fan, of course I didn't look it up to find out if there was any truth to it, but apparently their contract for the 12th man is running out or coming up, so they're gonna have to change it to like the 12th something. Anyway, the 12th man,
the 12th fan.
The 12th fan.
That would be actually original. Because I think they have to pay Texas A&M or somebody like
it's,
that.
No, it is.
They pay a college.
It's Texas A&M, and it's surprisingly not that much money. I think it was around six figures or even less than that, you know, for like a 3 or 4 year deal,
well,
of course.
That's lovely that you can say not a lot in six figures. I don't think a lot of people in our audience can say six figures.
Well, considering how much, how many, they've sold $60,000 in 12th man flags easily, not even counting stickers and shirts and all that other stuff. I don't think Texas A&M had any idea that it was going to explode like that. You know, and good for Seattle.
Fortunately, Patriots Nation just has to pay America, and that and the cost is freedom. Okay, that's how much the Patriots pay freedom. They pay free to say Patriots Nation because we were there, we beat the Redcoats, we freed America. And now Belichick and Tom Brady are leading a new revolution in the NFL.
Why? Okay, here's what I think the Patriots, Belichick, you can do this because you can work around this. You can make this work. If any coach can do this, you can, Mr. Belichick. Yep. You leave an open roster spot every year on your team for a veteran of the armed services, whether it's the Navy, Air Force, military. I'll even take National Guard. I don't care.
Coast Guard. The Coast Guard.
Maybe it's even a cop, police, fire department, but someone in the public service. You have an open tryout. I guarantee you could find some incredible guy that used to play football, join the Army, whatever, but make him a long snapper, give him the special teams. Like, you can find a 4.540 guy in an open tryout with just.
I like this because then, and you know what you call it, Cheese? You call it the 53rd man. You don't have to pay anyone for the royalty for that. The 53rd man, that's a great, that is another great.
And there's nothing idea. nothing more patriotic than employing a former military member.
All right, Cheese. You have a big game to get to tonight. Game three of the ALCS is about to start before.
Yeah,
it's
starting pretty soon. And then real quick, though, I wanted to get your thoughts on the Kyle Schwarber home run, you know, that they put in the box. You know, they encapsulated it on top of the scoreboard. Did you hear that?
Oh, I've heard. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Heard, yeah. But no one's allowed to touch it.
Right, exactly.
Hard guard.
Well, and Huck, you know, agreed with me in the interview, you know, when he said, he's like, you know, it's ridiculous and he doesn't pay attention to that stuff. Because, you know, to me, it creates another opportunity for someone to be like, oh, the ball got flooded or it froze and someone broke the case. And so now there's a new curse. You know, it just creates that kind of environment, you know.
All right, see, here's what I'm going to say to all those Cubs fans, John Huck, who listens, and everyone out there in Cubs Nation. Let me say this. The only ball you want to fight over is the ball that wins you the World Series. Like in 2004, Dub Mankiewicz took the ball, and it became a big, big issue here in Boston about who gets the ball, we get the ball, we want the ball. And Dub Mankiewicz, who, you know, Keith Fox, got that little tapper, and they threw the ball to first, and that's the final out. Then they beat the Cardinals in 2004 to break the curse. And Mankiewicz had it, and he had it in his home. And I think now it's in the Hall of Fame. But that's the thing. If you really want to have a fight about a ball, Cubs fans, it should be, trust me, I did that thing with Carlton Fisk home run. Carlton Fisk, it's a great video, and, you know, game six, and in extra innings, it forced the game seven. But guess what? We didn't win that one. Like the Odell Beckham one-handed catch, he didn't win that game. The thing you want to fight about is the one that wins you it all. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The one that wins you it all.
Well, okay, and then I wanted to get your thoughts, too, on the same question that I asked John. Will Joe Madden surpass Mike Ditka with the World Series? Is there enough room for a Ditka and a Madden steakhouse in Chicago?
Yes, there absolutely is. It's always great. It's one of those things where, you know, it's great to live in a world where, say, like Adam Vinatieri will never have to pay for a drink in Boston because of everything he did, even though he's on the Colts now. You want to be one of those 25 guys, one of those 53 guys, one of those 12 guys in basketball, however many guys are in fucking hockey, no one knows. You know, the number of guys on a hockey team is like the number of timeouts in playoff basketball. You just don't really know. You just know there are a lot of them.
It's 14. Yeah, 19 or something.
But then again, the big thing for me as a Red Sox fan is that, you know, young Theo Epstein, who's a little bit older now, could have reversed both the curse of the Red Sox and the Cubs. And that would be truly amazing if Theo Epstein was involved in both the World Series wins of the Chicago Cubs and the Boston Red Sox.
I don't see how you don't go down as the greatest general manager in baseball history at that point.
I think that's that becomes an executive Hall of Fame automatic, you know, first ballot Hall of Fame executive.
No doubt. Right. No question about it. Well, listeners, absolutely.
Plug.
Guys, go to one of our favorite people, onelovely.com, onelovely.com. If you need shirts printed up, email them, call them. A bunch of great baseball shirts. I call them one-offs, like limited print, 20 or 30. Awesome Royals stuff, baseball in general, Kansas City. They just got everything. Check out onelovely.com. Follow Eric on Twitter, Marino. He's tweeting now.
Marino.
He's tweeting occasionally now. The show at Sportsaholics, hashtag Sportsaholics, hashtag Heidemanball.
The show will go up every Sunday night, 11 to 1. Right now we're having guest host Brian Moses of the Roast Battle.
Ooh, nice.
Podcast at Verbal Violence for some replays of and replays and commentary on great Roast Battle battles. And check out Clee and Ed. We love the Clee and Ed podcast from the show of Go
Up. Huge Chiefs fan. Huge.
And you can check out the show of Go Up on Periscope. That's it for me, Steve. I'm going to say stay obsessed. What are you going
to
say?
I'm going to say go to John, JohnHuck, JohnHuck.me. And, PineTarPress.com. Chris Kamler always doing great work on that website. Baseball, Royals, everything. So go check that out. And with that, I will say stay obsessed. Go Royals.
Stay obsessed. Go Royals. Go Patriots. We'll see you in a week.
Midnight blue time.
Yeah, play that right now.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Midnight blue, baby.
Plaque in the back of the blue lac, navy blue long sleeves on my blue tees, powder blue knockoffs on my blue D's. Got a beautiful glow from that blue ice. Crack the crack game nice with them blue dice. Like the blunt with the torch and the flame blue. I'm in the fast lane getting my brains blue. Blue kicks look good with the blue fit. I keep a blue choke chain on my blue pit. Stuff a dove worth a buzz in a blue bag. Jumping out the blue jag with a blue rag. Blue belts, blue hats, blue coats. Don't sing, but I do hum blue notes. High as a kite all night off a blue dolphin. When I go, lay me in a blue coffin.
It's a beautiful day. It's a beautiful world. I'm in a beautiful car. And got a beautiful girl. It's a beautiful night. My chain blinks blue in the light. I'm beautiful when I grind. I'm beautiful when I shine.
Y'all know how I go. Everything blue so. If it ain't the blue tray, it's the blue foe. Blue Range Rover rolling on them blue eights. I hit watts and slide through the blue gates. Head high in the sky like a blue jay. I paint a picture clearer than a Blu-ray. Flow wetter than the water in the blue sea. I blew a pound with Big Meech and Blue D. She blew blue down, then she blew me. Matter of fact, she blew us on a blue bus. These females just love my blue steez. Bump blue magic and eat blue cheese. The blue G units came in the blue box. Blue Dickie shorts hang on the blue socks. I'm from the hood that blew the truce. Spider spin a web like a blue recluse. G
unit. It's a beautiful world. I'm in a beautiful car. And got a beautiful girl. It's a beautiful night. My chain blinks blue.